My name is Warren Zola, and I'm the Executive Director of the Boston College Chief Executives Club. Welcome to our podcast of the December 4th Forum, featuring Niren Chaudhary, Chairman of Panera Brands. As one of the top CEO speaking forums in the world, the Boston College Chief Executives Club gathers Boston's top business leaders several times each year. For this event, Niren Chaudhary, Chairman of Panera Brands, engaged in a fireside chat with Diane Hessen, CEO of Salient Ventures. The conversation focused on discussing topics including the challenges of succeeding an iconic founder, running restaurants during the pandemic, talent retention, his global experiences, and his leadership philosophy.
It was noted American poet Walt Whitman who said, "Be curious, not judgmental. Be curious, not judgmental." What a wonderful sentiment, both for this time of year, but also for all of us here today, as we continue to engage in our passion for lifelong learning. Ask questions, discernment, without a filter of bias. I implore you this holiday season and every season to do so. On behalf of Boston College, the Carroll School of Management, and our president, Father William P. Leahy, welcome to the Boston College Chief Executives Club. Whitman often explored themes of the interconnectedness of human nature. The sentiment of being curious without prejudice. In doing so, aligns with his interest and emphasis on our interconnectedness, our acceptance, and our celebration, not tolerance, but celebration of diversity. And what a wonderful place to do that right here, as you think about this organization. As we bring together people from different backgrounds, different industries, for diverse thought, communication, and to continue to learn. We have several events in 2024 that have been confirmed, and we will send those dates to you in the near future. We are excited about the new year and look forward to sharing those dates with you soon. I also, during this holiday season, would be remiss if I didn't give thanks to the Boston Harbor Hotel and the team there with Stephen and Rachel and the staff that have done such a masterful job of providing such tremendous service throughout the year. So I hope you would please join me in thanking the staff of the Wharf Room of the Boston Harbor Hotel. And as many of you go through your lists of things to do this month, as you get ready to celebrate the holidays, and you try to think about what that perfect gift might be next to the menorah or underneath the tree, don't forget that Boston College will be playing a football game in Fenway Park on December 28th. Now, our host for today is Diane Hessen, our friend. She is an award-winning entrepreneur, innovator, author, and business executive known for her work in technology and the market research industries. She is the founder of C-Space, formerly known as Communispace, and her expertise, her insight, and her humor has brought her to be a sought-after leader on boards of both for-profit and not-for-profit alike, as she continues to make a positive impact on her community. She got her undergraduate degree from Tufts University and an MBA from Harvard Business School. We're thrilled that Diane is our host and serves on our Board of Governors for the Boston College Chief Executives Club. As you all know today, our keynote speaker is Niren Chaudhary, the chairman of Panera Brands. He has a background in the food and restaurant industry, having served in executive roles specializing on brand management and a focus on global business operations. He has held leadership positions within the food industry and the restaurant industry at both Krispy Kreme and Yum Brands. He holds a bachelor's degree in economics from St. Stephen's College in Delhi and an MBA in marketing from the University of Delhi. He has completed his advanced management program at Harvard Business School. I ask you to please join me in welcoming Diane and Aaron to our stage.
Hi, everybody. Or maybe I'll stand for a sec, give you a little context. It's so great to see so many of you here. So in 1987, you can sit.
Okay. I always do what she says.
He's nervous. He's nervous that I'm going to say the wrong number. In 1987, Ron Shaikh, who many of us know, left his job at Au Bon Pain and decided he wanted to start something by himself. And shortly thereafter, he bought a company called the St. Louis Bread Company, which was a very humble community bakery that had a dream of putting a loaf of bread in everyone's arms. And Ron bought that, called it Panera, and the rest is history. Panera Brands today has over 4,000 locations and more than 120,000 employees all over the world. The company, a lot of you were asking me different questions. So the company was public. It was taken private in April of 2017, bought by JAB Holdings. And eventually Ron left and JAB brought in a new CEO, Niren Chowdhury, who more recently has just become chairman of Panera Brands, which includes Panera, Einstein Bagels, and Caribou Coffee. Lots of you had other questions about, well, gee, what's Ron's connection? Ron is off doing other things in the food space like Tate, Life Alive, et cetera. And you've all been so wonderful coming up to me this afternoon and talking with Niren, and I've realized that everybody has a favorite thing from Panera. So true confessions, mine is broccoli cheddar soup. Oh, I got some applause there, other broccoli cheddar soup fans. Anyway, I will tell you that as a board member at Panera, I have had the privilege of watching Niren up close. He is an extraordinary leader. He speaks four languages. He's a black belt in karate. He's a very talented musician. You get the idea here, and we're very lucky to have him with us today. So welcome, Niren.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you.
So I have 1,000 questions. So I thought if you're all willing to stay till about 5 o'clock, that would be great. But I want to, I know we have limited time, and I want to go to 2019. When you actually came into the organization. So you have this background of great accomplishment, but you're coming in to replace an iconic leader, big shoes to fill. So how did you come in Ron's shadow, and what was your strategy for winning the hearts and minds of its people?
Thank you, Diane, and it's a real pleasure to be here and to be able to share some thoughts with you. You're right, I came in 2019, dragged a very reluctant wife to Boston with the promise of grandchildren being close to us and everything else. But you know, Panera has always been the top of my aspiration in terms of food companies. And I was so grateful to get the opportunity, and Ron is an incredible leader, and I think I have huge respect for what he had created. Coming into Panera, I realized that organizations are essentially a human experience in the endeavor of creating enterprise value. And therefore, it is so important when you're new to establish relationships and a connection before you start transacting. And therefore, right from the start, my endeavor was only to introduce myself to all the stakeholders in terms of what they could expect, you know, from me, who I was, what my values were, what my beliefs were, what my intent is. And therefore, I shared the following. I shared with them that what they can expect from me as a leader is that I will lead with curiosity. I want to listen. I want to really, truly try and understand. I will always encourage candor. I want people to disagree with me. I will always applaud courage. I want people to stand up for what they believe in. And I will always be congruent. What I think, feel, say, and do will always be consistent. That's what I said they can expect from me. I said what's important to me and my beliefs is that the most important leader in a food retail business is the cafe general manager. And my job and the job of the entire executive team is to serve that cafe general manager. I also shared with the team that I really believe in the power and strength of franchisees and how 1+1 can actually be 3. I shared with them my operating philosophy, that to me, execution is everything. It truly is everything. And that I believe that if we love our associates, they will then delight our guests, and that's how we will create enterprise value. And finally, I shared with them the intent that my intent is to honor and respect the past, and at the same time, build a very exciting future that will have a much broader impact agenda of people, community, planet, and enterprise value. So that's how I started when I came.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And so then reality hit. So the cafe general manager is the most important thing, and yet on the heels of everything, all of a sudden you're faced with COVID.
Oh, yeah. The honeymoon did not last. They said, this guy sounds okay, but you know, look at this COVID. And before we knew it, within a week, we were sitting behind our computer screens, all disbanded and sitting remote. I'm sure you remember that.
And losing 50% of your sales.
Lost between, 50 to 75% of our sales overnight. Boom, gone. And you're just staring at the screen suddenly. You're not with your teams, and you're wondering, what on earth are you supposed to do? There is no playbook here. This hasn't happened before. But I reached a very important, I guess, insight as I look back, that when one is faced with so much of uncertainty and ambiguity, what's truly important is, first of all, to clarify the mindset to the organization. How are we going to show up? We said to the company, remember the metaphor of a windmill. We will be like the windmill. We're going to stand tall in the face and fury of the storm, and we're going to harness the energy of the storm and convert it into something good. We're going to become stronger. We're not going to dive into the nearest bunker and wait for the storm to pass. We're going to be the windmill. Next, we clarified to the company what's truly important. The two important goals, one was to keep our customers and employees safe, and second, to protect and preserve our brand and business. And then, very importantly, we defined decision filters. Number one, that we will have to take tough decisions, but we shall do that with compassion and with respect, because it's going to be hard. Second, let's not panic and burn the furniture, because this too shall pass. And third, let's look upon this as a unique opportunity for us to build trust with all our stakeholders, our customers, our community, our employees, because depending on how we treat them now, they will treat us once the pandemic is over. And so we did a bunch of things, interesting things. And I was sharing with somebody earlier, what does the customers need? You couldn't buy groceries, right? And we had so many ingredients in our stores that were going out of shelf life. So we rapidly opened a Panera grocery business. People were coming into the drive-thru and asking for milk and eggs. Pretty unique in Panera. For the community, there was inner school children didn't have access to school meals, so we started creating school meals with the USDA for the state of Ohio. But most importantly, I want to share with you this. Employees, I'm sure you must have also experienced it. We had to furlough 35,000 people. 35,000 people, and I was deeply, deeply impacted by this and wondering, how can I do that with compassion and respect and empathy? I have to do it for the sake of the company, but how can I do it with respect? And then I saw on the news that Walmart and CVS were looking for 100,000 more employees. So we got in touch with them and said, could you please hire our furloughed employees or give them an opportunity? And once we're ready, give them back. They said, we don't know about giving them back. But we shall open a dedicated website and they can apply and we'll be happy to take them on. So I think I really believe that, you know, when it's tough, it's an opportunity to shine. It's an opportunity to do the right big things the right way and build trust with all the stakeholders. And to always remember that there is always a long term after the short term.
That's great. And the other thing that you just said that I just wanted to follow up on was you talked about execution. So I've heard you say that before, that strategy is one thing, but it really is all about execution. Can you just talk about that a little more?
Sure. You know, I really believe that as leaders, we all want to have a broad impact agenda. We want to unlock the dreams of our people. We want to serve our communities. We want to protect our planet. We want to create enterprise value. To be able to do that, we need to have a strategy to win, and we need to be able to execute it. Now, how many of you think the strategy is more important?
Well, we already know the answer. No one's going to do that.
Yeah, that one really bombed. Maybe. This is meant to be participative, you know. So, well, you may think so, that, you know, both are important, etc. But in a relative sense, if you think about it, the reason why I believe execution really matters, because at the end of the day, strategy is to do with intellect and your head. Execution is to do with your heart. It's the ability for you to inspire, engage, and drive commitment in your employees to want to win, to want to execute that strategy better than anybody else. And that is a question of being inspired. And that comes by igniting that fire and that emotion in your employees, 130,000 people all across the company. So how do you really do that? Because if every employee wakes up and turns up at work every single day trying to be better than they were the previous day, that's how you win. And I believe the way to win, therefore, is to have superior execution. And superior execution, in turn, is a function of the right people doing the right things the right way. To me, the right people is totally a function of hiring for attitude, hiring people who have the right attitude. Right things are the fewest things that can have the biggest impact. And the right way is that thing called culture, that common special feeling that you create through words that are understood by everybody and behaviors that are embraced by everybody. So that's why I believe that execution is everything. It is about inspiring your teams to out-execute the competition against the strategy that you may have defined.
Yeah, and in terms of the people, I mean, personally, I think you've always had just the most extraordinary leadership team. So what do you look for? What is that thing that you look for when you're hiring people? And, you know, how do you just hold on? How do you get and retain great talent?
You know, I really look for a fit in terms of our culture. Who are we? Who do we want to show up as leaders? What are our values that are truly important? I look for all of that. But the single most important attribute above everything else that I think predicts curiosity, predicts humility, predicts respect, etc., is the person knowing that they are intrinsically humble and grounded, that they're smart enough to know that they're not smart enough, and that they turn up wanting to learn and wanting to genuinely listen to understand and constantly wanting to get better. So I think humility is that key attribute. And then I think when you have highly competent executive team, where you have an all-star team of individuals and you want to bring them together as an all-star team together, I have found the following, that you need to, of course, have trust so they can have productive conflict, they can disagree, and then they can commit, they can hold each other accountable and all that. We know that. But here is the thing that I found was absolute gold, which was that high-performance teams or individuals can become a team if you have a common understanding of rules of engagement. How should we show up and behave as a team? And I'll share with you a few examples. So as an executive team, we would say, for us, this executive team is our first team. It's the A team, not our functional team. Every time we show up, we'll be business first, function second. Every time we have a conflict, we must resolve that conflict within 24 hours or let it go. Every time we make a decision, we must make sure that decisions are made only with disagreement. And my favorite, let's eliminate hands from the grave, which is, I told you so. You If you remember, when we discussed, I was the only lone voice that told you we shouldn't be doing this. We don't want those hands from the grave. And I think when you have, it doesn't matter what those rules of engagement are, but if it's important thing is to have those rules of engagement, because that then really creates, you know, builds individual superstars into a superstar team.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hands from the grave. I want to ask you a little bit about innovation. I mean, Panera's always been known for its innovation. You know, technology first with mobile apps and kiosks and rapid pickup and everything. But the innovation that's gotten a lot of press over the last couple of years is your decision to have a subscription business, which started out as $8.99, I think, per month for unlimited coffee. Could you just share with us what the inspiration was for that and how is it going? And my true confession, I don't know, this is the opposite of hands from the grave, but I remember that when I heard this idea, I thought it was the stupidest idea. I'm like pounding my fist in the boardroom going, you can't apply a subscription business to like coffee. And I was wrong.
That hand from the grave I like.
That's the opposite, yeah.
If you say I was wrong, that's great. So, you know, in today's highly volatile, uncertain world, I think we all need to innovate. We know that. But I'll give you an important definition of innovation. I think innovation is meaningful only if it improves and strengthens the business model. Otherwise, it's a waste of effort, waste of time. It must improve the business model. And therefore, at Panera, we had... our desire was always to either make the brand more relevant, so food innovation. I don't know how many of you have tried the flatbread pizza, which is launched for the dinner day part. If you think about it, that's the only product you can share at a Panera Bread. So we came up with that idea of making it more relevant. Or how can we make the brand easier to access? So digital technology, biometric identification, geofencing, AI-enabled drive-through speakers. So relevant, easier, and then efficient. How can we drive more efficiency in supply chain and labor productivity? So those are the areas. So innovation is a mindset. It's a mindset of coming up and trying to always improve and do everything that we're doing much better than we did before. In Panera, I think the way we encourage it is through a culture of psychological safety. And you know, the one most important and effective way as leaders we can encourage ideation, psychological safety, is to encourage people to disagree. And just say, I'm going to decide only if you disagree. If somebody disagrees, then we are building a good culture that's going to be innovative. Innovation, we believe that has to be quick. So we believe in the adage of test quick, fail fast, scale big. And then we, of course, have a world-class innovation system through which we put all these ideas like the subscription club before we launch it. On the subscription club, consumer insight, how many people out here drink coffee every day? Outside home? So many of you. Did you know that you spend over $1,100 a year? Yes? Come on, confess. If you're spending more than $1,100.
Except for here, you get it for free.
$1,100, more than $1,100. Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you. Anybody here? No? Okay, so that's about, looking at you, I can say, it's about $2,500. Right there. So the consumer insight was premium coffee is just too damn expensive. It's too expensive. And therefore, we said we will democratize the joy of drinking coffee. And instead of $1,100, you can buy unlimited coffee for $100 a year at Panera. That was the idea. Now, having an insight is good enough. But you know, it's a strong start, but you need to know, does it really fit my brand uniquely? Am I the only one who can do this? Or can somebody copy it? So here are the reasons why we thought only we can do it. One, we were not selling a lot of coffee in any case. Right? So we were not a Starbucks or anybody else. We were not selling coffee. We were probably throwing more coffee than we were selling. So that made a lot of sense. Second, we had world-class bakery products. Have you tried our bakery products? They are absolutely phenomenal. And so we had that benefit of you come in through the lure of coffee and then you get introduced to our bread and bakery products. And then finally, we had the technological platform to execute this flawlessly. There are not many brands who can tick all those three boxes. So we had the idea, it was unique to us, and it has been phenomenally successful. A few numbers. 30% of the people who are coming in are absolutely new to the brand, never came before. The frequency has jumped up 8 to 10 times. People are coming into the cafe 8 to 10 times more than they ever did. And when they're coming in, 30% of the time, they're buying some food. So it's been hugely incremental and accretive to our business, and we're absolutely delighted with the results.
Yes, attachment. That's the big metric. Different topic. Global. So you've worked all over the world.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, you know, we talk a lot about how we're all connected these days. What do you think you've learned from that global experience that you bring to a role like Panera?
Sure, so let me share with you. I've lived and worked in Holland. I speak a bit of Dutch. I've lived and worked in Germany. I speak a bit of German. And I've lived and worked in the UK. I've lived in India and then the US, et cetera, and worked across 50 countries. Fascinating experience to go to different cultures and yet see the same brand. And I would share with you the following, which is probably a bit different. I think when we go global, our default is to immediately think different. I would say that brands can be scaled by looking for similarity whilst respecting the different. So look for what's common, but respect the different. So let me give you some examples. People. I don't know if you agree with me, but I really think people are the same wherever you go. We look different, we sound different, we speak different languages, but deep inside, all of us as human beings, we want the same thing. We want love, we want appreciation, we want empathy, we want compassion, we want to do good work, we are purpose-driven, we are good people. Human beings are the same wherever you go, yet there are stylistic differences that you have to be aware of. So look for the common, but be sensitive to what's different. So I went to the UK, it took me a while to understand the subtlety of the English language. When my boss said to me, I'd like to have a quiet word with you, it took me a while to understand that he was going to give me a bollocking, that he was not happy. I went to Holland. Everybody in my team wanted to be consulted. Didn't matter what their job was, a very egalitarian society. I had to ask, what do you think, what do you think, what do you think, what do you think, what do you think? And then we would decide by consensus, and then we would move. I drive across the border and go to Germany. I try the same stunt, and people are laughing at me and saying, what's wrong with you? You are the leader. It's your job to think. Why are you asking me? So I think look for what's common and then celebrate what's different. Similarly for the brands. You know, when you take your brands international, look for what's common, the functionality of the brand value proposition, the secret herbs and spices recipe of Kentucky Fried Chicken, or be it any other product, is the same wherever you go. The operating platform is the same wherever you go. And yet, emotional distinction has to be localized. You have to appeal to the local emotions of your consumers. So think global with a local heart. So I would say, in summary, for global businesses, look for what's common, and yet respect the differences.
You've made some, just thinking about the world and the planet, you've made some interesting commitments related to Panera and its impact on climate lately. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So I think I'm very a passionate believer that global warming and climate change is one of our biggest existential threats that we can face as leaders, as human beings. And I feel that it's a moral responsibility to leave the world in a much better shape than we found it for our children and future generations. And, you know, I came across a stat a few years ago that 30% of the greenhouse gas emissions are caused through food production. That was new to me. I knew about, you know, fuels and transportation, but I didn't quite realize a link between food production. And therefore, I thought for food production companies, and we being a food production company, it was absolutely imperative that we did something to change that. And therefore, our commitment to be climate positive by 2050, because climate neutral is not going to cut it. I think you've all heard it, that, you know, it's not going to be enough. We're already too late. How will we do it? We're still figuring it out. We are measuring where we are today, what the gap is, what exactly we need to do. And in the interim, we have then put some near-term commitments by 2025, hopefully by 2030, the following. 100% of our packaging should be circular, 50% of our energy should be green, and at least 60% of our food should be climate friendly. I don't know if you knew this, but we started measuring the carbon footprint of the food at Panera with the World Resources Institute. And we said, just like we have transparency on calories, why should we not have transparency on the carbon footprint of the food that we eat? And in doing so, we discovered that almost 55% of the food we sell at Panera is climate positive. Climate positive. So we have branded those products cool foods, so that our consumers who are busy living their lives, if they and they care about climate, we're making it easier for them through the choice of brand, a choice of a product, to contribute towards a global climate positive environment. So those are some of the things that we're trying to do.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's so inspirational. In fact, for those of you who are running companies and you're thinking about ESG, or you've decided you're not going to think about ESG anymore, or you want to call it CSR, or you're just trying to do better for the world, Panera's corporate social responsibility report is the best report I've seen of any company in the US. You can pull it right from their website. But if anybody in this room is trying to do a great job communicating all of the things that we're trying to do to give back, it's just, I think it's just a world-class report. Niren, I want to, before we turn this over to some Q&A, you've had, you know, you're such a positive person, and yet you've had tremendous grief in your life. You lost your child, Tanya, at age 7 months, and then you had another daughter, Aisha, who died in 2015. Can you tell us especially a little bit about Aisha and how all of this grief affected you as a leader?
Thank you so much for that question, Diane. So I think, as with all of us, you know, we have our own individual crosses to bear. I don't think there's anybody in this room who has been spared that pain and the challenge of just living life. I lost my first daughter when I was 24 years old, Tanya. She died with a congenital condition. I was too young to even process what happened, and she just passed away. Then I have a son, Ishan. He lives in New York. He's a musician, a fantastic kid. And then I had my daughter, Aisha, and she too had the same congenital disease, but she lived to 18 years of age, but eventually died of pulmonary fibrosis, which is like a hardening of the lung. And Aisha was, you know, incredibly special, and I have to brag about her a little bit, you know. You know, she was 13 when she was told she had only 5 years to live. And the way she lived it was not, oh my God, why do I have only 5 years to live? But yay, I have 5 years to live. That's how she lived life. She achieved more in those 5 years than many of us do in a lifetime. She's a motivational speaker on TED. You can find her talks on YouTube. She's written a best-selling book called My Little Epiphanies. Her story has been captured in a movie called The Sky is Pink on Netflix. And also a documentary was made to honor her recently called Black Sunshine Baby, also on Netflix. She was extraordinary, and she is easily my biggest inspiration and has shaped who I am. So when I was confronted with this unimaginable pain, of something that was totally beyond my control, I looked for serenity to just absorb and accept this monumental, irreversible loss, to accept it, that it has happened. And then I had to also learn to forgive myself for having failed my daughters as a father. I had to genuinely just try and forgive myself to be able to move forward. And what I want to share with you is the following. Whenever we have these kind of moments, and we all do, I think asking for serenity and then forgiveness is a way to move forward, but the only way to move forward after that is to love yourself. I found that I could not give to others what I do not have. I had to learn to love myself again to be of use to the people around me. And to do that, I did the following two things. One was a realization. All of us are going to die. We're all mortal. So we may as well have a ball. Have a blast. Live life with no regrets at all. Whatever your little heart desires, let's do it right here, right now, not yesterday, not the future. The only thing that we have is the moment now. Let's do it now. So I'll share some of my own silly examples. So when I lost Aisha, I took a sabbatical, and the first thing on my mind, you know, being a guy from India, always sort of dreamt of going to Harvard, couldn't afford it. That's where I went straight. I said, I'm going to go to Harvard and find myself again. I did an AMP there and was fantastic. But on another crazy note, I'm a musician, playing the guitar for 35 years and writing my songs for practically nobody. So I said, I'm going to change that. I hired a studio, hired some musicians, and banged out about 10 songs and launched them on Spotify and iTunes. Nobody listens to them. Except for my wife.
Yeah, he even wrote songs about like when they launched flatbread pizza.
Yeah.
He did the launch song for it.
Yeah,
well, there
flatbread
were like
pizza,
10
baguette,
people who listened
baguette,
to that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just get so, you know, side aside, I met my wife when she was 14, and when I was trying to woo her, I used to write romantic songs to her. And then once I got married 35 years later, no more songs for the wife, only songs for Panera Bread. Broccoli cheddar, baguette sandwich, chicken sandwich. So back to self-love. Self-love about, let's just live with no regrets. Let's seize the day, seize the moment, and do whatever we want to do right here, right now. The moment is now. You want to learn that language, do it now. You want to take a holiday, do it now. You want to play that sport, do it now. And the second was for me to just embrace all of my losses and failures that I've had and will have. Embrace them and allow them to shape who I am. And I have been shaped by the loss of my daughters. I want to live a life of courage where I focus on what I have control over, not what's happening to me. I want to live a life in gratitude, but I look at what's going right and not what I have lost. I want to live a life of generosity where I want to contribute and make a difference in the lives of people, community, and planet. That's what I want to do. So I've embraced these losses and I've made them part of who I am. It makes me more empathetic, more compassionate, and I want to serve others. That's what I want to do. So that's how my daughters have impacted me.
Thank you, Niren. I think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we all feel lucky to be in this room having heard that. Let's open this up for questions. We got a bunch of hands here. I know Lauren and Gail have mics. So, hi.
I guess I'm lucky I have a mic. My name is Joanne Simons, and I'm a Subscription Club member, and I've had a fantasy of being buried in a coffin made up of your bread.
Wow.
Time I walk into this store.
That's the most unique thing I've heard.
But there's several of us in the room that I think want to thank you, especially Northeast ARC, and we support 15,000 people with disabilities. And our partners at Panera Bread throughout the region have been extraordinary employers of people with disabilities. So I want to thank you. And maybe you have some words of encouragement to those in the room who have not yet realized that people with disabilities can make such phenomenal contributions in the workplace.
Sure, I think that's so important. So let me just share with you this thought. You know, there is so much strife in the world around us right now. I mean, there's so much division and so much anger. We can't do a lot about that, but we can do everything within the companies and the enterprises that we serve and that we lead. So why can't we as leaders make our companies a shining example of the world that we wish to see? Why can't we make our companies tolerant, inclusive, embracing, respectful, diverse, and helping people with disability or less fortunate, so that we create a better company, which eventually perhaps one day adds up to a better world, because we have full control over being able to steward our companies that way. That's what I would say. I think It's laudable what you're doing. I think it's very, very important. And I'm sure more leaders will give you more support.
Great. Who else? I see some hands over here.
Hi, my name's Wendy Lane. I'm just wondering, you know, you have a very compassionate and inclusive way of addressing things. I'm wondering what you think about the role of CEOs is in addressing some of the public issues that come up. I mean, you know, the whole Disney phenomenon and all of that. I mean, how does one handle something like that these days?
I think that's a great question. I feel that companies should be very congruent to who they are and what they truly stand for. And if there is a violation of who they are and what they truly stand for, then they should express what they feel. Otherwise, they should basically get on with doing business and making their company a great place to work. But if it is incongruent with their core beliefs, core values, yes, it is important to have a point of view because your employees expect that and your customers expect that. But not on everything or every single thing that might be out there. That is not really relevant, I feel.
Did you get what you need, Wendy?
Well, you know, I'm just wondering whether people are going to let you get away with that. Do you ever just say to them, I'm not going to comment? Is that the point? That, you know, there are certain issues that you're just saying?
Yes.
Everybody here?
Yes, you say, yeah. I mean, I don't want to comment. We don't really have a point of view.
Okay. Thanks.
I think it's important for leaders to, you know, have that very clear distinction. If it's aligned with the company and who they are and their purpose, yes. Otherwise, yeah.
Great, over here.
Viren, Naaf Singh, it was truly an inspiring chat. And I love going to your restaurants. I don't like the coffee, but I do love the soup. the soup is outside.
Are you a subscription club member?
Not yet.
Not yet.
But I will go on to try that. I'm just like curious because the last 10 years, your restaurants have gone through an amazing technological revolution in my mind. As you look at the next 10 years, what does it look like and what are you preparing for?
Sure. So I think technology, you know, we have a fantastic infrastructure of technology and always has been there and we continue to invest heavily behind that. But for me, technology is a means to an end. And that end is actually making the brand easier to access, removing friction, personalizing things. So whatever appropriate technology exists to make the experience frictionless and more personalized, we will keep chasing that down, keep investing behind it, and keep chasing it down. It's hard to really, you know, project 10 years out given the pace at which things are moving as to what that might be, except then to clarify the intent that we will always, we are believers in technology as being a means to an end. And that means to that end is very important, that we're always in service of our customers, make things more relevant, easier, more distinctive.
Who else? Have another question here? Or over, Jerry, you want to?
First of all, thank you for sharing the transformational power of loss. That's so beautiful for us to hear. Some years ago in this very room, Arne Sorensen, the then head of Marriott Corporation, spoke about the importance of the welcome. And so welcoming was one of your employees at my Panera years ago that I hired him and he's become my terrific employee. He's here today. I wonder if you could speak a little about your how you inculcate your values into the customer-facing aspect of the Panera company.
Okay, so how do you bring your culture to life into your customers? I think that's a great question. So I think you build a culture that the employees can feel. And the culture at Panera is one of, we call it the Panera warmth, where we welcome our guests into what we think is their second home, not the third place. This is not a place where you just come only for coffee, it's your second home. And we want to give you that Panera warmth, the welcome that we would give to a family member or a friend in our own home. So we share that intent extensively with all of our associates at all times. And then we expect our leaders to lead with that intent every time they're in their cafes and they're visiting the stores, that with their little touches of bending down to speak to a child, you know, seeing a grandfather with a little kid on a treat and bringing forth a nice baked cookie and celebrating that moment. And actually looking out for this, how can I apply Panera warmth, not in a predictable way, which is, you know, consistently done, cookie cutter, no, authentically human. And therefore, with that as a background, we hire all our team members against this. Can they actually deliver the Panera warmth? And you know what? If you hire people who are actually hospitable and give them a caring environment, magic just happens automatically. You know? So that's our approach towards ensuring that our customers can feel that Panera warmth of being a family in their own second home.
Great. I'm going to do a lightning round. Right?
Oh, boy.
And then we'll wrap up, because I'm all right. I mean, we're okay, right, Warren?
Absolutely.
All right. You ready?
Yes.
What's the top-selling item at Panera?
Broccoli cheddar soup.
Oh, is
chipotle
it?
Chicken yeah! Avocado. Chipotle chicken avocado.
Right. Oh, really? What was that?
Chipotle chicken avocado.
Sandwich?
Yeah, sandwich.
Is second?
I think they're all top tier.
And do you put the soup in a bread bowl?
Yes.
Yeah, that's like about 80,000 calories. How would your wife?
It's worth it.
How would your wife? yeah, right. How would your wife Aditi describe you?
My wife would describe me as a human doing, not a human being. She's saying you're always doing something.
What's the last song you wrote?
Baguette sandwich.
This is so nerdy. Niren, what's your favorite book?
Oh, I'm reading Adam Grant. I don't know if anybody's read Adam Grant. Think Again. I love that book. I love what how he writes, and he's just fantastic.
Do you know the secret KFC recipe, and could you share it just among all of us, just this intimate room?
If I knew the secret Colonel's secret recipe, I'd be lying at the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
That's amazing. So dead. There you are. You're one of the most.
Nobody knows the Colonel's secret recipe. Not even the Colonel.
Really? That's amazing. I thought you were going to say yes, but you can't tell. How would your son describe you?
Oh, that's a bit somewhat painful. My son says, Dad, I wish you would be less interesting and more interested. Ouch.
That's a good one.
That hurts.
What do you think you need to get better at?
Golf.
I hear you're a great golfer.
I'm terrible.
Oh, you are.
I keep buying new sets.
Terrible probably means he's got like a 10 handicap. What's your favorite thing to eat at Panera?
Oh, Fuji apple salad. Any lovers of Fuji apple salad?
Oh, all right, there's one, David Chang. There's another, Gail Goodman. Oh, those are good people to like Fuji apple salad, David Chang and Gail Goodman. Great. We're running out of time here. So let me just ask you, we have a room full of corporate leaders here. And we all want to be great. So just in closing, give us some advice.
Can I give two things?
Yeah, you can, yeah. You have 3 minutes.
Oh yeah, this will take less than 3 minutes. I think the first one is, you know, I really realized in life, resilience and curiosity matter the most. If you're curious and if you're resilient, you will always get up and walk again. And just like going to the gym when you exercise your muscles, you can exercise your resilience and curiosity muscle. You can, every single day. And this is how. If there's anything in your life that you think you cannot do, or anything in your life that you don't want to do, do it. That's exercising the resilience muscle. If it's, you say, I'm not a linguist, I can't speak languages, speak it. You say, gym is too hard, I don't want to do it, do it. I can't play a musical instrument, play it. And I think it's a simple daily exercise of just don't want to do it, can't do it, do it. So that's one, resilience and curiosity. The second one I think is to be the best version of who you are. Of course, one has to be aware of our strengths because that's who we are. But I will tell you, beware your strengths. Because your strengths, if they're unchecked and overplayed, they will trip you up and knock you over. And let me explain how. with my own strengths that are actually watch out. So one of my strengths is I trust and I love people. The minute I meet them, I give them trust. You don't have to earn it. You just get trust. So you can imagine if it is unchecked and overplayed, I can be blindsided. I may not know what's happening. I believe things at face value. Or I fall in love with people and I don't fire them. Major issues. Second is a strength of mine is curiosity. I love ideas. I love new ideas. I get bored with old ideas. So imagine if it's overplayed or unchecked, then that'll drive the organization absolutely batshit crazy. Like, what do you want us to do? You know, where is the focus? The third thing, I have a long list of these. Third thing is, I always like to have a point of view. I have a point of view. But if it's overplayed and unchecked, I can make the organization intellectually lazy. Oh, he'll tell us what to do, you know? And I will not grow and develop the confidence of the leaders in the company. So then, I think, what do you do with that? Never give up your strengths, because the strengths are who you are. But be self-aware and ask yourself, if it is overplayed, what could actually happen? And then develop an intervention. So for me, for example, on the first aspect of truth, because I might get blindsided, I have cultivated a group of truth tellers, people who are courageous, blunt, and give it to me unfiltered. And periodically, I'll call them and say, okay, tell me the real deal. The second one around curiosity, I surround myself with executive team members and tell them, please keep me focused. I can get a little carried away, but I want to be focused. Keep me focused. And the third one is, which is about adding too much value. This is a great one. I have this, every time I walk into a room, I have this metaphoric three marbles in my pocket. And every time I speak, I have to give up a marble. So that keeps me in check, that I don't start talking about the design of the toilets or something else. And don't have a point of view on everything. And I choose my moments to intervene carefully. So be self-aware and create these interventions. So those two things are what I would say.
Excellent.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast of the Boston College Chief Executives Club, featuring Niren Chaudhary, Chairman of Panera Brands. To learn more about the Boston College Chief Executives Club, a program of the Carroll School of Management at Boston College, please visit our website at www.bc.edu/CEO Club.